Go to page 3 with me in paragraph 6. Paragraph 6 is the core of the order, although it's not the only relevant portion. We have paragraph 6 in yellow and in blue. The portions in yellow are factually incorrect. Defense counsel clearly stated that Dr. Wones was at fault. Dr. Wones, the case involved Mr. Clark, who had 4 back surgeries performed over 93 days. The defendant, Dr. Tang, performed the first. Dr. Wones, the standard of care expert for the plaintiff, performed 2 and 3. Harborview performed the 4th.
I think your opponent concedes that there are misstatements in the order and kind of attributes it, well, we didn't have a full transcript at some point or something like that. But what's your response to their argument? Well, the theme of this is there were allusions to implications of fault. That's wrong.
We don't believe it's true, Your Honor. Go, if you would, join me at line 3 of the next page, page 4. It was obvious to the court that the theme of defense counsel's case was that any injuries sustained by the plaintiff were caused by Dr. Wones, not defendant. That's absolutely true. It's absolutely appropriate. There was never a motion in limine granted on that point. If you go to my opponent's brief in the first full sentence on page 6, they will tell you that a motion in limine was granted on that point. It's not the case. We quote the trial judge, who I know well, is a good friend of mine and is a great civil servant and a great judge. But he made a mistake here.
I'm sorry, Mr. Tilden. With regard to the standard of review, the appellant's brief says de novo because it has to do with that. But don't we have to review this under abuse of discretion?
No, sir. Other than paragraph 8, the above-the-waist issues, which are 3 out of the 25 in their brief, no portion of the new trial order addresses any discretion. The court can't have discretion to inaccurately cite the record, nor can it exercise discretion to exclude causation. It can't exercise discretion to prevent a credibility attack. This case was, I don't do med-mal work, but I have seen the cases and I've touched on them over the course of my career. It's unlike any med-mal case I've been familiar with. Typically, you have agreed upon conduct and a question whether the conduct satisfied the standard of care or was beneath it. That was not the issue here. The issue here was what happened and who did it and who was telling the truth among the two doctors. Dr. Wones, who performed surgeries 2 and 3, testified that the surgeon who performed the defendant did not repair a CFS leak, that he left a bone fragment, that he left an epidural mass, and using Exhibit 58, he said, look, he did not lessen pressure on the nerve. The only neuroradiologist to testify, ours, looked at Exhibit 58 and he said, the nerve's not on that slide. It's impossible to see.
Why isn't it, though, I hate to jump to another topic, but there are some troublesome things in this record. And so, for example, when the defense asked Dr. Wands, hypothetically, if you caused a CSF leak and didn't tell Clark, wouldn't that be a violation of the standard of care? Yes. Did you tell Clark after your surgeries? That can be nothing but an assertion of a violation of the standard of care by Dr. Wands.
I don't believe that's true, Your Honor. In context, the question is first asked by our opponents of Dr. Tang. And the question, it's going to the truth of who created this tear. Dr. Wands testified that he repaired a tear where Dr. Tang operated. Dr. Bhatia testified that there were no sutures there, that it did not happen, that there was no repair. This is a critical credibility debate. With that background, Dr. Tang is asked by our opponents, well, hypothetically, if you had not repaired a tear and you needed to, shouldn't you have told the plaintiff? And we said, well, sure. The same question is a credibility attack on Dr. Wones. And
well,
we raised
could it. I ask you this? One of the things that seems to come out of this case is a recognition that if you are trying to prevent somebody from talking about fault, but you are going to let them talk about causation, it's a difficult line. It's very easy to feel, I would think, that you say, well, this was caused by Dr. Wones. It's easy to feel that Dr. Wones is at fault. So I'm asking, why exactly did this situation come about? Is this common in medical malpractice cases? Is there a tactical reason why the plaintiffs did not sue Dr. Wones, or why you got in the situation that you could address?
I can't address why Dr. Wones wasn't sued. I cannot address whether it's common in med mal cases. I can tell you it's common in tort cases. Often you have every possible empty chair in, every possible defendant in the room. Often you have a number of empty chairs and you point at them, but it's often the case that it's simpler just to argue causation and not pick a fight. So to the extent I can answer the question, that's it. I'm out of time. I'll be
back. Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Leonard Feldman, and I'm counsel for the plaintiffs Tom and Allison Clark. Judge McDermott sat through a three-week trial. He saw every single one of the instances of misconduct at issue in this case, every single one.
Could I ask you this? There's this motion in limine, which seems to be at the heart of this. One way to read the record is that you asked for and got, and Judge McDermott enforced a motion in limine that said that you cannot attribute causation to Dr. Wones. Is that your position, that it's okay to restrict the plaintiff?
It is, but I want to be careful about
defendant from attributing causation to anybody else.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I want to be careful about how far we suggest that the court go with that.
Was the order on the motion in limine, am I not mistaken? He did grant that. He said, I grant your motion in limine, and your motion in limine, for some reason, I mean, you were seriously urging your client at that point that there should be a restriction on it, on causation.
Right, and here's why. Because you asked this question, is this common in medical malpractice
cases?
Well,
really what I'm asking you now is that what you wanted?
What we wanted from this judge was that they could not claim or argue or infer, that's the language that Judge McDermott used, that Dr. Wones violated the standard of care.
Well, but that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking you, didn't your motion in limine ask for an order that prevented them from attributing causation to Dr.
Wong? We did.
Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, so you seriously thought that was a good idea at that point when you made that motion?
Correct.
And you're now backing off that, or are you still advocating that that is an appropriate line to draw?
It is an appropriate line to draw, and the reason it's an appropriate line to
without regard to fault. I mean, fault is one thing, but causation is another.
That's okay, correct.
They have the right to defend and say they did not, that even if Dr. Chang, the defendant, was at fault, that it didn't cause the injury. Didn't they have the right to argue that?
And they did.
No, I'm asking you. Did they have the right to argue it?
Yes, they had the right to argue that.
Okay, but your motion in limine tried to prevent them from arguing.
No, our motion in limine sought to prevent them from arguing that Dr. Wones caused the harm. And so if you look at this temporally, they can argue, for example, that if you look at the MRIs after Dr. Tang, there's no harm. There's no evidence of any malpractice. What they wanted to do was look at the MRIs after Dr. Wones operated and show that he caused harm. And under the Henderson case, they're on the hook for that harm, whether it's caused by Dr. Wones or not, so long as we can prove that Dr. Tang violated the standard of care. So the reason we're in this pickle to begin with, Your Honors, and I think this is the most significant point, is they had an obligation to bring a non-party fault claim against Dr. Wones. And in a medical malpractice case, what that meant was they had to have an expert witness who would say that Dr. Wones violated the standard of care. And they had to disclose what those opinions were so that we could either bring a claim.
All different from causation. I mean, duty, breach, causation, damages, right? So.
Yes, but causation is.
You seem to be mixing up the idea of fault with causation. That's the problem I'm trying to express here.
For example, if I can jump in.
Yes.
Yeah.
If someone said there's an inherent risk in a surgery in the low back area.
Right.
For whatever reason, this second and third surgeries, we have a MRI that shows a leakage after that. Therefore, is it violating the order in limine to say, we've got evidence that this was the result of these surgeries, the inherent risk in the surgeries, not violation of a standard of care? That would be appropriate testimony, wouldn't it?
I think so, yeah, the way you've described it. But the moment that you say that Dr. Wones caused that harm and that he violated the standard of care in the way that he did that, then you've stepped over the line. And this judge was very careful to explain to defense counsel over and over and over again, you can do whatever you want with regard to causation. You can do whatever you want with regard to damages. But the moment that you argue or clearly infer that Dr. Wones violated the standard of care, you've violated the order in limine.
So are you saying then that whenever they say, because here's the sentence from the order that counsel was just pointing out, the theme of defense counsel's case was that any injuries sustained by the plaintiff were caused by Dr. Wones, not the defendant.
Right.
And so the court, one infers from this sentence, thought that that was an improper theme. And you're arguing that, yes, it was an improper theme, because the minute you say that Dr. Wones caused the injuries, you're necessarily or at least suggesting that Dr. Wones violated the standard of care.
If and to the extent you suggest that Dr. Wones violated the standard of care, it is a violation of the order in limine. An example, there was...
Okay, again, that's not exactly my question.
Yeah.
Okay, so... If they argued and put on evidence that showed that the injuries that the plaintiff sustained were caused by Dr. Wones.
Our original motion.
Does that mean that Dr. Wones violated the standard of care, and is that why it's improper for this to be their theme? Is it improper for their theme to be causation?
No, but... If they suggest...
So this sentence and the order is wrong, then?
No, it's not wrong at all. What the judge was saying, having been through this trial, is that the way they went about showing causation, they were backdooring...
Okay.
They were backdooring standard of care, and they do it over and over again.
So we should understand the judge's ruling as this was their theme, and as a theme it was okay, but they went beyond it.
Right.
Okay.
And he made that clear time and time again in the record, that... And there were a few instances where they asked for guidance, and there was a few instances where he gave guidance whether he was asked for it or not. And he said, at that point in which you're arguing or clearly inferring that there was a violation of the standard of care, you've violated the order in limine.
Unfortunately, the order kind of gets in the way of that analysis, doesn't it? Because you start off with the clear inaccuracies in the factual statements, the examples that are given. For example, from opening statement, seemed to be precisely what the clarification given by the court. You can use these PowerPoints, you can make this comparison of the MRIs, and even referring to related to the surgery by Dr. Wants. That seems to be exactly what most of the opening statement had to deal with.
I don't think that's at all what the opening statement had to deal with, and I don't think that's how Judge McDermott viewed it. What he did was, after the jury came back and we filed our motion for a new trial, he looked back at the totality of the circumstances. And this is a case with repeated instances of attorney misconduct and a cumulative impact. And what he saw looking back on it is that the theme of their case was that Dr. Wones violated the standard of care. And when you look at these, you know, one by one by one by one, we're really back in the situation that the U.S. or that the Washington Supreme Court criticized in Teeter, which is looking at it through a de novo standard of review. When you look at the totality of the circumstances and you give the judge not just abuse of discretion review, but heightened abuse of discretion review, it's clear that what he found was that there was a theme in this case that violated his orders in limine, and he went on to address the prejudice of that theme, which was to suggest that Dr. Wones not only caused the harm, but was not a credible witness. And so it undermined the fair trial that the Clarks were entitled to.
Drawing the line between causation and fault is a difficult line. Drawing the line between credibility of an expert witness who's also the suspect,
right,
the theme that's at issue, is almost an impossible line to draw, isn't it?
Not really. I mean, they had a lot of tools that were available to them. They could have shown that Dr. Wones didn't review the medical literature or the medical records, that his opinions were not credible because they were inconsistent, or that his credentials were inappropriate. But again, the one thing that they couldn't do is claim, argue, or clearly infer that he violated the standard of care. And to the extent that they do that, and that undermines his credibility, then that's where the line gets a little bit fuzzy. But that's what they were not permitted to do. And it wasn't the trial court that made this up and said, hey, you know, this is a great line, I'd like to draw it. It's because they didn't bring a claim of non-party fault against Dr. Wones, and that put him in a situation where he didn't know what their views were, we didn't know what their views were, and we didn't have an expert who was ready to defend his care. So they backdoored credibility through standard of care testimony. They backdoored causation through standard of care testimony, and they ultimately repeatedly violated the order in limine, and they got caught. And as in Teeter, this court should affirm.
Thank you.
Jeff Tilden for Dr. Tang. We don't believe there was any confusion in Judge McDermott's mind. He told us on the motion in limine, you may present exactly the evidence you've told me. I understand it's the gravamen of your case. Our experts were quite clear, as were we, that we were not attacking standard of care. Dr. Tang was asked four times by counsel for the plaintiff, are you finding that something negligent happened? Was he at fault? No, 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 and no. Dr. Bhatia was asked once or twice. He was asked twice, and only the second time did the answer come out clearly. Are you attacking the standard of care? I'm not. I wouldn't have performed this, but other doctors would have. What we say in closing, we said we are not here to play the blame game, but we are here to show you that events occurring after surgery number two caused his problems. Causation is a completely fair defense in any tort case. My opponent said one thing with which I take strong issue just about 2 minutes ago. The prejudice arises from a credibility attack. That cannot possibly be true. It is our right to challenge the credibility of every witness. Is it the case that one juror, or perhaps 12, concluded that maybe Dr. Wones didn't know what he was doing, if in fact he couldn't read an MRI scan? They may have. But that wasn't our purpose. We have the right to challenge the credibility. He said, look at this MRI scan. The nerve is on here. Dr. Tang didn't fix it. We said, the nerve is not on there. That's completely fair game. We have a constitutional right to attack the credibility of every single witness, and we did so here. Repeated instances of misconduct. In the opposition brief, we numbered 25 instances of misconduct. Other than the instances in opening that they contend alleged fault, and we contend do not, but if you leave those aside, there is not a single objection in the record to this fault business. Not a single objection. There are 17 and a half of the 25 with no objection whatsoever. The other 7.5, what are they? They're the opening, and then the three that relate to above-the-waist conduct. This is paragraph 8 of Judge McDermott's motion for new trial order.
How would you distinguish Teeter versus Deck? I mean, that seems to be the Supreme Court saying, you know, we repose a lot of confidence in the trial judge in making these decisions.
Several ways.
They have a lot of latitude to try to draw these lines in a difficult case and to enforce them.
Understood. About half a dozen ways. One, nothing in Teeter v. Deck allows the court to invent evidence. And Judge McDermott relied on a brief that had been filed 1 month earlier on the first or second day of trial by our opponents in incorporating four sentences in paragraph 6 that have substantial errors in them. He just inserted it lock, stock, and barrel, and like most trial judges, certainly like me if I were a trial judge, he assumed that what the lawyers told him was true. But there is no ability to rely on facts that don't exist. There is no ability to prevent someone from presenting a causation defense or a credibility attack. Teeter v. Deck involved discretionary actions by the judge and repeated conduct by a lawyer over and over again with respect to evidence that wasn't admissible, with respect to evidence covered by motion in limine, and with respect to evidence that had not been admitted yet, as well as with respect to speaking objections. What happened in the three-week trial? Three above-the-waist issues. That's all. The second one is not a motion in limine violation by any... Okay. I'm done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That concludes our docket for the day, and the court will be at recess.
All rise. The court is in recess.